Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
Just how important are youth coaches in today's society? This is Lisa Cohn. Today I'm here with Dr. John McCarthy, who oversees Boston University's coaching specialization in the Physical Education, Health, and Coaching Graduate Program. He trains coaches to be leaders in their field. He's going to tell us just what makes a good coach. I'm also here with my brother, mental game coach, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, John. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Good.
Hi, Lisa.
John, I understand that you focus on how participating in sports leads to kids' growth and development. Can you begin by telling me a little bit about the importance of good coaching in today's society?
Well, Lisa, I think that the youth sport coach has the opportunity to really enhance the growth and development of young people, especially today as society has changed. We invest a lot into sport, you know, family system structure has changed. Maybe the church has changed. Maybe the social structures have changed in a lot of places. So youth sport seems to be a place where people, young kids, are coming to get a positive experience. And so there's a lot of opportunity for us to leverage that experience to enhance their growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach, even if it's a volunteer parent kind of coach,
mm-hmm.
or a high school coach or even a college coach, they have an opportunity there, and then thereby a responsibility to try and deliver on those.
Right. Now, can you give me the top, what you see as the top three characteristics of good coaches?
Well, I think, you know, it depends, you know, in our society, if you're talking about good coaches, you know, I studied professional and college coaches, and you know how we judge them is usually on their win-loss record.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're talking about youth sport, I don't know if that's actually an appropriate way of judging whether they're good or not. A lot of times you hear, actually what sometimes I'm the most suspicious of a guy says, you know, my teams are 88-1, you know, and to me that sounds like maybe the sides aren't fair, you know.
Right.
Maybe it's more about the, you know, that person's ego than it would be whether the kids are having a good experience or not. So I think the first thing that coaches need to be mindful of is to make the sport enjoyable. And I think a lot of times when I say, well, make it fun, when people say, well, what's this fun nonsense, you know, they're supposed to work hard and do all this stuff. But actually, you know, if the sport is engaging and it's fun, the practice are organized in a way that it's enjoyable for the kids and they learn skills, I would say that then it's going to be more motivating for them. So I think the first thing, you know, we worked on a grant for youth sport baseball in Boston here where we talked about being fun, safe, and organized.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's pretty simple, but there's a lot to that. You know, fun, you know, has something to do with, you know, understanding what the kids need at different age levels. And so that age appropriateness, even, you know, context is different. You know, if you're in a urban setting, it might be different than a suburban setting. So kind of knowing what the kids want, I think, is important. Then the second thing is that organizational piece is a lot of coaches waste a lot of time if they're not, if they don't have any training on how to organize and structure a practice that can keep some momentum and kids can keep learning as the practice goes on. You know, kids are easily distracted. You know, if the ice cream truck comes by and you know, or somebody walks across the field, or a dog runs across, you know, into the field, you know, all of a sudden you've lost their attention. And I think if there's a lot of stoppages because coaches don't know how to keep them engaged, then, you know, that organizational piece is actually critical to the kids, you know, succeeding.
Right, and having fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we have to be careful even how we define fun, you know, is why do kids play video games? You know, they'll work hard, they'll work hours on those things. You know, my nephews used to play endlessly on them, and it's fun because it's challenging at the right level.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun where their skill level, and they get to pick it too. They say, "Well, I want to try level two now." So it's kind of, I think, interesting is that, you know, the kids kind of, they become responsible for their own learning, really, in a video game. And I think we've kind of taken that all away from them in the way youth sport is structured now. So I think, you know, maybe give the kids a little bit of input and choice, too, as they learn the games and learn different aspects of the game.
Now, what do you mean by that? It's interesting that you say that kids aren't responsible for their own learning. We always tell, in our workbook, we say the kids should be responsible for their own self-confidence, and obviously that includes learning. How can you create a situation that allows them to be responsible for their own learning?
Well, there are many people writing about this now as this kind of athlete-centered kind of approach. You know, there's a soccer coach here in Boston, a guy named Dean Conway, who wrote a book called Soccer Calling. Talking to, you know, they have a really interesting idea. They're working in doing youth soccer in Jamaica Plain. They don't have teams. So they just, the first eight kids who show up, they split them up four on a side, and they play each other. And if the games are not even, then they make the sides even so the games are better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing that does, it takes the parents out of it, because then now their team doesn't win or lose. It's just a group of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually rotate coaches, so they get a different coach this week than they would next week. And so I think this when I say kids are responsible for their own learning, is that the way youth sport is structured and coach training is structured is it's always this drill, 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 and they get to play at the end.
Right.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, for many years in the physical education field, there's been a thing called teaching games for understanding or game sense, whatever you want to call it, where there's all these small-sided games that have objectives that are playing. You know, the objective in soccer is to score. So a lot of times we don't even let the kids shoot, you know. So
mm-hmm.
we need to organize these games so that they can learn the objectives of the game and get a lot of chances to practice it.
Now, are you saying, now I'm going to ask Patrick to jump in here. He talks about the difference between practicing versus playing. And do you have an opinion about this?
Well, yeah. I mean, we call it, you know, when kids are learning skills, they're very much in a learning environment. And in order to perform, they need to go out and maybe let go of some of the technical details that they focus on in a learning environment and be able to go out and just have fun, react, you know, kind of be in the moment. But, you know, I want to focus this a little bit on, it seems like a lot of the parents that follow us want to improve the performance of their kids or are struggling with some aspect. My child is choking, or my child looks great in practice and struggles in games, or my child has lost motivation and doesn't want to play anymore or isn't motivated to do his or her best. It seems like the following that we have are parents that are really interested in helping their child have fun, of course, but also be able to perform up to their capabilities. I mean, I just did a seminar last week for the University of Buffalo. A Division I coach said to me, "We're terrible about this stuff. We're terrible about helping kids in terms of the mental game and in terms of performing their best in competition." So I guess, you know, I would like to throw it back, you know, and say, John, are more coaches being educated on you know, in terms of the mental game aspects of helping kids improve their confidence, get the most out of their ability. You know, we talk so much about having fun, but it seems like a lot of the parents that contact us are about, I want my child to perform up to the way that they're capable of and not fall apart, you know, when they're in a performance-oriented situation, that it could be a lesson for them, you know, later in their life when they stop playing sports.
Well, and before you answer that question, John, I just want to jump in and give my opinion, and that is that I think a good coach does both. A good coach makes it fun, motivates the kid, and gets the most out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think that the one thing that kind of comes to my mind immediately when you talk about the parents that are coming to you because their kids aren't performing well in pressure situations, I think one of the, you know, my wife is a sports psychologist, and she has these people, she works with young people, and oftentimes the parents are, in my view and her view, as big an obstacle as anything. So she has to work with the kids to be able to let the parent take the parent out of the equation as much as they can for the kid. So when the kids, when the coaches are really, I mean, when the parents are really concerned about how the coach has to get their kids to perform and not choke and all this stuff, you know, to me that's sort of like the first sign of an over-involved parent, because the kids are often choking because, you know, now they have to go sit in the car and get grilled by their mom or dad why they didn't perform well. You know, one of the things in my wife's book was, Richard Ginsberg wrote about, don't ask about the performance in the game for 24 hours after a game with the kids. Now, that's kind of a rule that, you know, I'm sure very few people follow, but, you know, what if we did that? Because I do hear your concern, which is, you know, are these kids going to be able to perform, and what life lesson can they learn from it? But I think it has to be... over time, they have to learn to enjoy the game, and I'm certainly not one of these people would say, you know, winning isn't, or competition is bad for kids, or that we're putting, you know, that pressure to do stuff is all bad. But I think it's the way that they perceive it. A lot of what the studies have been done in youth baseball. Smith and Small, guys out in Washington, University of Washington, done a lot of stuff on what are the messages that the parents are and the coaches are giving to the kids. You know, are they positive? Are they are the messages that they're sending them through their coaching saying, giving them the impression that they're not good, that they're not competent? And that's why we have such a massive dropout rate. You know, I think it's one reason that it's more complex than that. But
and I'll just quote the stat as I understand it: it's 75% of young athletes drop out by the time they're 13.
Yeah, I mean, we could debate over why that is. You know, there's social reasons and there's societal things that are influences, but. You know, I think the person who's been around sport, and then if you've interviewed kids of why they drop out, the reasons are changing. You know, it used to be that they had other things that they were interested in, and now there's a lot more pressure in evaluation, so there's this deselection. So if you're in youth soccer, they're selecting kids, or which means then they're deselecting kids, at such early ages that the messages are to the kids is, I'm not good, you know, I'm not good enough to play travel in my town. So what does that mean? So I should give up. Now, you, as Pat points out, maybe the message would be, well, you persevere and you make your high school team even though you didn't make your town's travel team. But unfortunately, that's not what the kids who have the low level of competence, you know, feeling of perceived competence, they're the ones at the highest risk to feel like, you know, I can't do this. I'm not good at it. So I think we need to structure our youth sport organizations so that all kids feel like they can do this, whatever that means. And I know that's working against a runaway train in the other direction, which is, you know, selection and travel teams and private clubs and trainers and all the stuff that goes on out there that, you know, is in service of getting my kid a scholarship or making the national team or whatever, whatever higher aspiration the parents might have for the kids. And it's a little bit problematic for people to reclaim it and say, you know, I want my kid, you know, we work with youth baseball and we work, try to work with the coaches of a particular community. And we talk to them about what the objectives of their season should be for their kids. You know, we're talking T-ball and the first level after that. And the guy, the father comes over afterwards, he didn't say anything in the whole meeting. He goes, you know, I just want my kid to learn to be part of a team and be, you know, learn about teamwork. Well, you know, that's great. You know, if we could stay there with our kids, then I think we'd be in a better place than we are right now.
Now, tell me what top tips you would give sports parents, given the situation as it is today, with all the pressure and how it seems like the goal of youth sports has changed dramatically over the years.
Well, I'm certainly not. There's no one answer. I think in my wife's book with Richard Ginsberg and Steve Durant, they talk about knowing your kid, knowing yourself. You know, I think this is where a lot of the parents kind of fall short, is either they're, you know, saying, well, I only made it to high school and I want my kid to make it to college. Well, actually, that's irrelevant to the situation. Is if you're not aware of what baggage you're bringing to the table as a parent, then you're likely to kind of fall into some trap. You know, I also know parents that they never played sport, and yet they're the most pressuring kind of parents because they don't really understand what goes into it. So there's no one thing, but the third thing they talk about is, you know that sporting environment. What goes on in there? What's the culture of that team or league? What do they insist on? Do they have any coach training? Do they have any guidelines on how, you know, how coaches are supposed to comport themselves? What are the rules for, you know, rotation, playing time? Because a lot of those things are going to give you a real inkling into what the objectives of the overall league is. And I think, you know, does your kid fit into that setting, that's where you have to decide. I think, unfortunately, as I said earlier, I think the parents have to be more proactive to say, you know, I don't know if this is okay. Maybe we shouldn't play 70 games of travel soccer. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe in our town we're only going to play 30.
And do you know how they do that? How could parents go about changing the environment?
Well, they got to get together in their local community and say, you know, it's okay. You know, it's okay that they do something else in another town, but, you know, as far as we're concerned, this is all we want to do.
Right.
And that's not as easy as it sounds because, you know, oftentimes that's where people say, well, we're not going to do it. I'll give you a story. Mike Arruzione here is a Boston University hockey player. Who went on to become an Olympian, you know, the Miracle Ice in 1980, and he still works at the university. And the story of him trying to sign his kid up for youth hockey, and he says to the people there, hey, I don't want my kid to play in any games. I just want him to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they looked, you know, the people running the league were, you know, kind of stunned and kind of didn't know how to handle this, and they kind of went on the side and had a side discussion and said, well, okay, Mr. Arruzione, we'll let you do it, but don't tell anybody else. And, you know, that's absurd. You know, of course, because it's Mike Arruzione, they let him do it. But if it was a regular parent, they would have said, no, he can't do that.
Right.
And so I think it's the parents getting together and saying, what is the purpose of this league? Because otherwise there's no chance that the competitive juices of these parents and the adults involved are going to take over, the objectives. And then it becomes an adult-centered organization. So even though they say everyone in the whole place will say, oh, I'm out here for the kids. You know, I hear it all the time. And, of course, there's probably some good motivations in these people. But they don't realize, you know, how much this competitive culture they're dragging into this, where the kids really, they quit because they don't feel they're good, you know, or they realize they're not going to get an opportunity to play.
I like the example you gave earlier about having teams that just form as people show up and then switching coaches and switching the team members around. That's an interesting idea, very different than the way we do it now.
Well, it's not my idea, but, this Dean Conway, who used to be the in charge of the Mass Youth Soccer, you know, mm-hmm. the second biggest youth sport organization in America,
mm-hmm.
He came and talked to my class the other day, and, you know, some of the stuff he's talking about makes eminent sense to me, which is, you know, we have to kind of fight back against this runaway train. We have to try to at least offer another track.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I don't actually believe that you're going to change all those kind of situations. There's a lot of money involved. People are making more money. They're leaving their jobs to run youth hockey organizations. What does that tell you?
Mm-hmm.
That it's become professional in a way that's, you know, someone's gaining from it. And so now there's going to be some motivations there that may run counter to the growth and development of young people.
Right.
So I think there aren't enough alternative models to what's happening out there. That's in part.
So we need more alternatives. I can give you a great example. Here in Portland, Oregon, my 9-year-old daughter has been playing soccer since she was in kindergarten, and by fifth grade she has to decide whether or not she wants to play classic. And you know what? She's a great player. I don't want her to play classic. I don't want her to invest the time in that. I want her to do music and piano and performing arts as well as soccer. So there isn't really another game in town.
Yeah, I mean, there it is limiting. And so, one, it's limiting. You know, more and more of these people are kind of specializing at earlier and earlier ages, and there's probably some evidence that's, coming forward, whether it's, orthopedic evidence that they're playing too many baseball games or
mm-hmm.
too many soccer games or too many hours in the gymnastics, just the level of kids are, by the time they, you know, we see them here at Boston University when they're college students, and a lot of times they're the people end up in my wife's office, because they're, profoundly kind of feel pressured and burnt out and, they're demotivated by the time they're a scholarship athlete or a college athlete. So
Patrick, I want to hear from Patrick. What's your opinion on all this in terms of what parents can do, or do you think that they ought to remake youth sports, as John suggests?
Well, coaches don't operate, in a vacuum. And, coach can be so positive and do all the right things and set up the youth sport experience well, then the child can go home, and then the parents can undo all that. And mm-hmm. like John says, put a lot of pressure and expectation on the child. It can also happen the other way, too, I think. I think parents can do all the right thing, and then they can go and they can have a bad youth sports experience because you got a really negative coach or a bad coach. So as I'm listening to, you talk, I'm thinking about somehow being able to make, get parents on board, get coaches on board, get them communicating. Sometimes the parent can be the bad apple. Sometimes it can be the coach can be the bad apple. But I think as we're trying to do is educate parents just as much as you go after the youth sports coaches as well.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I mean, that's great, Patrick. I don't think it's, I certainly don't want to paint the the coaches as villains in this situation, or the parents. I think parents and coaches usually coach to what they know, or are doing the best they can do in what they, from what they know. And so then there's, you know, this is a great service to people to learn more about, you know, how can I help my kid succeed? And to me, succeed would be not just, you know, make the travel soccer team, but to carry something good out of their sport experience to the rest of their lives, to maybe develop a healthy approach to exercise and physical fitness. You know, there's so many things they could learn from it. But for sure, getting the parents and the coaches on the same page is, you know, is going to require some collaboration at the community level, because I think it's hard to go at it from a, you know, say, look, national, we're going to have a national certification program for all these sports, you know, for parents and coaches. And, you know, it, in our society, it doesn't actually, it's not likely. So that's why I kind of more look at these kind of grassroots local communities that say, you know, what is the purpose of what we're doing here in baseball, let's say? And I think they could, you know, over time really develop programs that the parents come to, and the parents get some guide of, you know, how to parent their kid in this situation, and then also the coaches are trained to coach in a specific way. Because I think one of the missing pieces when we go out and work on these grants is there's no intentionality, you know. So the only thing that governs these environments is, you know, we try to win the game, or, you know, or we try to have fun. But I think to really accomplish some of the things that we hope to accomplish in youth sport, which is build someone's confidence or teach them about how to teach them responsibility to themselves or other people, that requires some more, you know, you need some objectives in there that everyone can agree upon, and then some methods or ways of trying to reach those objectives. And so that's more work. But I agree with your premise that they got to get the coaches and the parents on the same page.
Right. And in the meantime, though, you're giving parents permission to try something different and look for different options. I mean, my plan in my town is to start talking to parents now and saying, well, I don't want my kid on a classic team. No matter how good she is, I don't want her on a classic team in fifth grade. I want an alternative. And maybe by fifth grade there will be alternatives.
Exactly. And there is no quick fix right now. People have to kind of really kind of agitate almost for, like, you know, because my kids are 5.5, 3.5, and 1. So my youth, my youngest daughter started soccer this year, just kind of very low level, just kind of learn how to some skills and play little games type of thing. But I can see, like, all I have to do is look around the field and see when these little kids get older, like, where it's headed. And there's some things I don't like about that. And, you know, I had some friends of mine who wanted me to come and do a talk for them. They said, you wait, you're going to hate it. It's like, you're going to be driving them all over. Your weekends are gone. It's crazy. You got to divide up your kids. And it's like I don't like the sound of that. You know, that doesn't sound, just like in your case, Lisa, I don't even want my kid to do that, you know. Now, maybe they want to do it, but we'll have to work that out then. But
right, when we get there. But you want alternatives. You want options. You want alternatives, and you have to work toward them. Well, we're running much longer than we usually run, so I'm going to wrap this up, and hopefully we can touch base with you another time, John. You've been really helpful, and thank you both.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. I'm sorry if I was occupying too much space there. But
oh, no, no, no. It's okay.
Okay.
Bye now.
Okay.
Be sure to visit youthsportpsychology.com to get our new workbook CD program, The Ultimate Sports Parent. You can also pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. That's youthsportpsychology.com.